As almost all of you know, this United Lodge of Theosophists, or any other, anywhere in the world, operates on the basis of the policy as stated on the back of our periodical. Take the time to read it. First of all, you should never associate yourself with anything, unless you know its standards, its principles, its policy of operation. You will probably never find a shorter statement than the few paragraphs for ULT, and that's because it is based on the wisdom of the ancient wisdom religion. Therefore, there are no distinctions made as to gender, occupation, belief, organizations you belong to, race, any condition. All are recognized as one, all from one infinite principle, one source. Therefore, no matter how we appear to ourselves or to each other, we are identical. We are spiritual beings in evolution, in different forms, different conditions, all, as we will study this morning in our subject of karma, all those conditions self-created by the power of the soul in action. It's truly awesome when you stop to think about it. But even more awesome is the fact that the United Lodge of Theosophists exists. It is supported absolutely, entirely, by the voluntary efforts of those who are participating in it. There are no dues, no fees. We don't pass the hat. The work that is done here is done strictly on a voluntary basis. Those souls who see the need for humanity to keep these ideas alive and out there and clean and pure, not tainted with our opinion or our fanciful ideas, but the way it was originally given out by those masters of wisdom. So the work here is given to you. It is freely given to you on the basis of the generosity of those associates who feel its importance. So we meet twice weekly, and we have our regular winter schedule coming up, which will be the October, November, December, where we will have our Sunday morning talks, presentations, and then a Wednesday evening study class. As it is now, we have our Sunday morning meeting in H.P. Blavatsky's Isis Unveiled, just taking little segments of it. And then we have our Wednesday evening meeting in the Bhagavad Gita, using the notes on the Bhagavad Gita as our text. The meetings, of course, are free. Everyone is welcome. The purpose of all of this effort is to help to awaken the truth within every soul that they are spiritual, not physical. Spiritual beings using a physical body to gain knowledge and experience. Now, our subject for next week is reason and intuition. And if you didn't pick up a copy, there's a copy of the Isis material available behind the usher for next week. But we do seriously remind you again, we are completely dependent on voluntary donations. If you can only give a dollar, it's a dollar towards that electric bill. So it is important, maybe tacky, but important. Now, we've asked some students to read just a few paragraphs from this material to get us started on the important ideas, and then, of course, we'll be open to all of the material.
The wheel of law has the following. Buddhists believe that every act, word, and thought has its consequences, which will appear sooner or later in the present or in the future state. world or birth in heaven in some future state. This is strict and impartial justice. This is the idea of a supreme power which cannot fail and therefore can neither wrath nor mercy, but leaves every cause, great or small, to work out its inevitable effects. With what measure you merit,
meet,
it shall be measured to you again. Neither by expression nor implication points to any hope of future mercy or salvation by proxy. Cruelty and mercy are finite feelings. The supreme deity is infinite. Hence, it can only be just, and justice must be blind.
We have often wondered at the extraordinary ideas.
Wait, one second. There's someone who comes ahead of you.
Oh.
On the same page, below Matthew. We have often wondered.
Wait, then I have really done a confusing thing.
Are we completing that paragraph?
Are we completing our therapy? Is that what you said? Oh, I hope so. If you would read just below in that paragraph that was being read from, a Buddhist might believe, to the end of that paragraph.
Paragraph 2.
A Buddhist?
Yes.
A Buddhist might believe in the existence of a God, sublime above all human qualities and attributes, a perfect God, above love and hatred and jealousy, calmly resting in a quiet happiness that nothing could disturb. And as such a God, he would speak no disparagement, not from a desire to please him or fear to offend him, but from natural veneration. But he cannot understand a God with the attributes and qualities of men, a God who loves and hates and shows anger, a deity who, whether described to him by Christian missionaries or by Mohammedans or Brahmins or Jews, falls below his standard of even an ordinary good man.
We have often wondered at the extraordinary ideas of God and his justice that seem to be honestly held by those Christians who blindly rely upon the clergy for their religion and never upon their own reason. How strangely illogical is this doctrine of the atonement? The clergy say, no matter how enormous our crimes against the laws of God and man, we have but to believe in the self-sacrifice of Jesus for the salvation of mankind, and his blood will wash out every stain. God's mercy is boundless and unfathomable. It is impossible to conceive of a human sin so damnable that the price paid in advance for the redemption of the sinner would not wipe it out if a thousandfold worse. And furthermore, it is never too late to repent. Though the offender wait until the last minute of the last hour of the last day of his mortal life before his blanched lips utter the confession of faith, he may go to paradise. The dying thief did it, and so may all others as vile. These are the assumptions of the church.
So now we have, in contrast to the rule of law, what is the assumption here in the West? And we do respect his justice that seems to be honestly held by those Christians. We're not speaking against individual Christians. They are sincere, and they are holding to their beliefs as best they can. But what they are believing is illogical. And what theosophy is determined that we shall all understand is that there is a law that is in operation in the universe, and therefore in us. So, your questions are invited. Yes?
Whenever we think about, in regard specifically to the Christian beliefs, and as was just said, they hold very dearly what they believe,
mm-hmm.
and we never cannot think about Mother Teresa,
mm-hmm.
because she was, even though she had a very strong belief, how she manifested those beliefs into what she did for other people is, you know, it's a wonderful thing to behold.
Well,
so
she,
I wonder then,
yeah.
if somebody has such a strong belief, but not based in knowledge, I mean, how do we rectify that?
Well, we don't have to. The individual has to resolve that for themselves. But if we look at the life of Mother Teresa, there's a publication recently of some of her own journal, and she was full of religious doubts. But that never stopped her from providing the charity that she thought was needed. And the same is true of Father Damien and other strong Catholics. But what HPB wrote about Father Damien, and we think this would apply to Mother Teresa, is that whatever religion they were born into, they would be behaving in exactly the same way. Yes.
That's what I was going to say. Francis of Assisi, too, is another good example.
Mm-hmm.
If you really are sincerely searching for God, I think you'll find it in any of those.
Right.
It's all basically the same.
St. Francis of Assisi is a wonderful life to read about. You will absolutely laugh out loud when the young man stripped down, giving up everything, and walked naked through the town. Of course, everyone thought he was mad. Well, he was, but he was mad with love for truth and serving others. It's a beautiful story. Yes.
So I think even HPB talked about...
Would you speak up? Because a lot of people have trouble hearing anymore.
I've heard in many sources, including, I think, theosophy, that karma is impersonal.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the idea of the fixed truth of the law of karma makes sense to me because, you know, that for every action there's an appropriate reaction. But, you know, if we truly are one,
mm-hmm.
and karma is impersonal,
mm-hmm.
then why can't an action that I perform, the karma of it be felt by somebody else?
Ah, it's a wonderful question. And it is absolutely true in the larger sense. Everything that any of us do as an individual impacts everyone else to the degree that they're susceptible, which is no different from saying, gee, I have measles. Are you going to get it from me? Not if you've already had it, not if you're protected in some way. So we're all cells of one body. If we think of it that way, if I as a cell am sickly, doesn't it affect the whole body? Some of the body will be seriously impacted. Some will throw it off because of its own vigor and health. But if you mean that in a very personal way, let's take it in the most mundane thing. Suppose you provide me with some medicine, and it's going to help whatever condition I have. I take that medicine, and I feel good, and I start healing. Does it affect you? No, only in that indirect, we're all cells of one body. But to affect you, you have to take the same medicine. Or, equally, if I want to have certain muscles, I have to exercise. Does that affect you? Well, maybe it impels you to work harder, or I want to do what she did, but you have to do it yourself. It's impersonal, meaning it's a law, and a law only works to the extent that you put in the components that make that law. Ask any woman who is learning to cook when she's a new bride how many failures she had because she forgot one thing, whether it was the baking powder or the baking soda. A lot of failures lead to knowledge, but it has to be you putting forth the effort. Yes?
Like what you were saying, I was also thinking, like they say, the best way to be revolutionary is to look for enlightenment, because just like one enlightened person
right.
will affect
everyone.
Everybody
yes.
around him, whether he has any politics or not.
There were a couple of lines in here that made me go and look up where it came from. She's talking about how the agitation of a stone being dropped into a pond, and I had to look up the chaos theory. If a butterfly flaps its wings in Beijing, the stock market on Wall Street flounders. So it's that recognition that everything ultimately affects everything else. And that's a very serious thing to realize.
Yeah.
But then there is the more intimate karma within ourselves and within our own family, within our circle of friends. I wonder how often we realize that the wrong thing said in the wrong way can crush somebody. Literally crush their dreams or hopes, whether you do it to a child or to a friend, and you didn't mean it that way. It's like we ought to carry a sign around that says, I don't mean it for sure, okay? Or we should learn to censor ourselves better. We want to speak, what is it the Buddha says? Say nothing if it isn't true, if it isn't helpful, if it isn't appropriate at the moment. Well, some of us won't learn that in this life. We are chatterboxes. But we can learn to think before we say something. Yes?
What about the idea of being a karmic agent? Sometimes we find ourselves not in complete control. And what happens is the person that we are in front of, they lose their control as well.
Right.
So it's like, what did I just do?
Well, that, you know, the complexity of that question is, yes, you opened the door for somebody, but didn't they walk through? We can never stand back and say, oh, it wasn't my fault. So-and-so said something, did something. I'm innocent. We can't say that. What we can say is, in this life, at this moment, I didn't choose to harm that person or behave that way. But somehow, I triggered something for them. So in the sense of the here and now, we are innocent. But as a soul, we had connection with the causes. So it's a very, very delicate issue. And if we find ourselves in such a situation, we can immediately say, whoa, I didn't mean that. Can we sit for a minute and just be quiet so we regain our balance? And if they won't do it, you can say, excuse me, I'm going to go leave the room and throw up. And then I'll come back. Anything to disturb the pattern of what's happening.
Yeah.
Yes.
And we think this idea of how we affect others is even like tenfold nowadays or a hundredfold because...
Try a zillion.
Because of social media.
And I don't know why we call it social. If you really look into it, it's pretty unsocial. I mean, the things that are happening where, well, I don't want to offend anybody, and people are easily offended these days by this subject, and that's breastfeeding, which is called natural, normal. It's the way the whole process is supposed to be carried out. There are women who have submitted things on Facebook, for instance, whether, I don't know, do you do blogs on Facebook or it's just facing? I don't know. But anyway, the reaction that comes back at them is that they're sexual perverts.
Wow.
That they are monsters and out of their minds. And the whole thing is so twisted and turned on its head and ugly and mean and nasty to no purpose. What is the purpose? To stop nature and its natural functions? It's insane. So we don't think social media is very social at all. But granted, you can literally ruin your life. And it's happened to teenagers who've submitted things to Facebook, and then they start out on their career, and they find that whatever they put in pulls them down and destroys them. Yes?
Yeah, back to the comment that if you unintentionally trigger something, it seems that we may act as an agent of karma,
mm-hmm.
not intending to be a person.
Not intending to be an agent either.
No, but it happens, and then we have to take it from there. And
yes. And why does it happen? It happens because life uses what's ever available to get the lesson home to you. You know, we're told that everything about life has one purpose, the education of the soul. And that doesn't just mean human beings. There is soul life even in the atom. It's all one and the same. And it's all a process of growth from within outwards. It's nothing imposed on you. So we have to take responsibility, but not in the sense of I meant to do that. Although sometimes we might mean to do it, but we have to be aware. Yes?
The concept of unintentional agent, you said it yourself, that one does not have to walk through that door.
Exactly.
Open,
exactly.
Which means that we need to be fully in control of ourselves all the time. So when we're affecting negatively somebody else, two things lost control, you and the somebody else. Both have lost control. If either one would have been in control, then the chaos would never have occurred. If both would have been in control and never walked through the door, which they should
there would
have been
be no
control,
door.
There would be no door.
Right.
So I think the lesson for me here is be always in control of yourself.
But that's the lesson of Krishna, that's the lesson of Christ, that's the lesson of Buddha. Unfortunately, it remains just a lesson to us. We're not willing to take it in and do the homework. Yes?
Well, it's amazing to make that promise to ourselves. This will never happen. I'll be on guard. One day I'm a little sick. I don't get a headache. And someone says something, and that old behavior comes right back. And you're doing it, and you're watching yourself do it, and you're going, why am I doing this? But then the next time, maybe it won't happen like that.
However, that magic moment of standing and asking, why am I doing this, proves several things. One, that I have a measure of control, or how could I see what I'm doing while I'm doing it? Obviously, there's more to me than just this behavior of the personal nature. There's a higher power that I have that is my mind. If I can stand there and do that, then I have the power to change the behavior. And it's that recognition that begins the whole process, which is a funny way of saying, hey, if you didn't fall down and make a mistake, you'd never learn to do it correctly. As hard as that is for us to realize. Yes?
Alternative interpretation of the Christian doctrine of salvation, which is not inconsistent with what we're talking about here.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there are some who believe, and this is from perhaps more ancient esoteric teachings, that salvation simply is living in a state where you have an observing ego. So it's an awareness where you watch the karma unfold, but it does not create suffering. So you can be have salvation after a single moment where all of a sudden your perspective changes. And there's just a small portion of you that's watching the drama unfold around you.
Mm-hmm.
So it actually is not inconsistent.
No, it is not inconsistent. But there's also the realization to reach such a point, what went before? That's like saying somebody wakes up one morning and they're a doctor. No, it can't happen. They had to go through various steps and stages of learning, of correcting their own mistakes, of studying the efforts of others. They had to reach a degree of wisdom before they could stand in that place. Yes, you wake up one morning and you're a doctor, but what went before it was ages of instruction and effort. Yes.
In Krishnamurti's book, The Fear of the Master, he says that the masters told him that two of the vital precepts are control of your thought and self-control of your thought,
mm-hmm.
and self-control of your actions.
Mm-hmm.
So reaching that point, obviously the masters have already overcome that ability or
perfected
acquired
it.
Or
right.
perfected the ability to control thought and control their own actions. We have not. What is it that we need to do so?
Well, good morning. Welcome to Personal Life. It is said that's why we're here. We have fashioned all of the instruments that we use. In other words, your keenness of mind, your keenness of vision, your ability to use your hands well, to do this, that, or the other, are all from past effort. Your lack of control in this area or that area are from going in the opposite direction or not caring about that. One of the things that we're told that life does to us is provoke us to step away from what's comfortable, what we think we know, and dare to deal with the unknown, which is those parts of ourselves that are out of alignment. Yes. Oh, karma is just a circle, yes.
I think the observation of thoughts and emotions can actually affect the way that what path we choose to go
mm-hmm.
down about thoughts and things like that. Like, for example, if somebody provokes something in me with my observation of how that affects me, I can choose to go down the best road that
exactly.
affects both of us.
Exactly, but you're in that position because of past efforts. You can't wake up one day and find yourself wise.
Right.
It won't happen. But to be able to be observant, to see not just what you know and what you're comfortable with, but to see what makes you uncomfortable, to see what makes you disagreeable, these are invaluable. You cannot fix something if you haven't found out what it is. So you become your own physician. You become a scientist because you, as a soul, are wisdom. But we keep coming back to medicine this morning. We don't know why. But we've always thought it was a very profound thing. A doctor who was in the jungle somewhere who had to do an appendectomy on himself, or he was going to die. It was that simple. So, of course, he did it, and he succeeded, and they wrote about it. But that's what we have to do. We have to do all of this altering, surgery, repairing, fixing on ourselves while living. The thing you talked about, thoughts and feelings, it all comes back to ideas. If the ideas I hold are puny, if the ideas I hold that no matter what I do, I can be saved or rescued by someone else, then the results are going to be pitiful and we'll keep falling back into the same difficulties. Yes, we'll get to you in 1 second.
Well, we've always thought that the journey was one of sacrifice. We see it in nature. One kingdom sacrifices itself for the higher kingdom.
Mm-hmm.
And that our sacrifice has to be in the personal nature, by the impersonal, so that we can truly embrace everyone. We cannot be personal about
right.
that. We have to be impersonal. So that's what that impersonality is, what is where the truth lies.
And sacrifice means to make sacred. Why should we make this sacred? It's temporary, it's changeable. Why should we even try? Because it is the ambassador of ourselves as a spiritual being. You know, it is said that when we as souls came to this planet, it was with great joy and sincere energy towards lifting up all of life, making everything know itself to be divine. And instead, we fell in love with the conditions we found. We liked having personal power and personal sensation. And the more we acted in a certain way, the more we built the walls around us, until these great souls have to come back and remind us and say, wake up. You are in a dream. The reality is you are the dreamer. Get back to reality. Yes.
And the literature that I use reminds me that one should hardly aspire to control a universe when they can barely control themselves. Also, that salvation's task is changing concepts.
Salvation's task is changing concepts. And the first thing you said reminded me of Woody Allen's, some people are out to understand the universe, to find their way in the universe. I can't even find a Chinese restaurant. So we're in that pitiful condition of having our real nature tweaking us, reminding us that what we really want is so far above all of this. And then we have our personal nature that says, well, a jaguar wouldn't be that bad, would it? So we have this battleground. And if we're really interested in the battle, read the Bhagavad Gita with an open mind and an open heart, and realize that is the fight that is happening. You only have one nature, but in expression, it's dual. You have the higher mind and the lower mind, just one mind. What is that expression there? There are two wolves inside of man. Not good, what is the word, a beneficent wolf and a wicked wolf, and the student asks the shaman, well, which one will live? And the answer is, whichever one you feed. Yes.
Yeah,
oh, I got it right. Good. I don't always, but there's so much wisdom out there. But the problem is we carry it around. Maybe we put it in our pocket. Well, that's not where it belongs. The wisdom belongs in your heart. Your heart is the student that you have to wrestle, get to listen to you, because it's where your heart is attached that all of your learning and growth and behavior comes from. Yes?
One of the things that is so important for us in dealing with other people is this respect we have.
Can you all hear her?
Okay, good. Respect for other religions, and it brings to mind, I have a very old good friend who is a devout Catholic, and she knows what I believe, and I know what she believes, and we respect each other.
Right.
And when my mother-in-law died, she told me that she loved the service that was given for her, which was very theosophical. And afterwards, she prayed to God and asked God to embrace her in His kingdom.
Which is lovely, and we should.
It was a wonderful thing for her to express what she thought.
But theosophy is not asking anyone to disparage anyone else's religion or to look down on them for being devout. As a matter of fact, a devout person of any religion who's sincerely struggling to live up to it is 1,000 times better off than an intellectual theosophist. Because an intellectual theosophist thinks, well, I have it. I have it all. My ideas are just fine. But they haven't changed any of their behavior. So to respect others' religions, but at the same time to realize that some of the ideas that they're holding on to are holding them back. If you don't know that karma is a reality, you are building difficulties for yourself. But life is kind and instructive and will put things in your path, books and people. Yes. You changed your mind.
Huh? Well, no. In the idea of vicarious atonement is one which is held by many Catholics and probably held by myself in some in another form of...
Oh, we all have a touch of that, don't we?
So what does that do, actually, to the soul? If we believe that vicarious atonement, or we only believe in this one life...
Good. Let's open it up. Just little ideas. What do you think vicarious atonement does to you as an individual? Yes.
Absolves you of all responsibility.
All responsibility absolved already. What else?
It could let go of some inner conflicts to give you space to take in what's real.
Ah, well, you're using it in a positive way. Good for you. But as a lead weight on the soul, it is something else. Yes.
Deep in the karmic return, it will be more difficult. The more energy we give it in this life, when it returns, it will have...
And you know what we always like to do? Go to physical analogies. Why, if I push something away, does it come back worse? We'll try that swinging door. If you just give it a little push, it'll push back a little. If you shove it, it's going to hit you in the face. Karma is the expression of law on every plane of being. And what we fail to see is with ourselves, as souls in evolution, karma is a moral law. It's why we do what we do. Now, the one who believes in vicarious atonement as I'm giving myself a little space, pushing all of that aside so that I can grow, well, that's quite different. Even so, they're going to face the results of everything. Yes.
And the responsibility that goes along with living your life is given, that person is giving it away because they figure, well, I can always, you know, I can go rob this bank, but then I'll be forgiven for it. So there's that personal responsibility that is lessened.
You know, HPB, we honestly don't know if it's in ISIS or in the secret doctrine. She questions this further, saying, you know, if someone who has murdered someone could be forgiven in the way of vicarious atonement, how is that just to the person they murdered? You have to realize that everything goes out in ramifications, just like the example of the stone thrown in the pond. Yes?
The bigger question is accountability.
Is accountability?
It takes away all accountability.
Yes. Vicarious atonement isn't logical in any way. It is saying that the loss of one person's life covers all the sins that could possibly be done by another person at any point in the future. There's no logic there. Yes?
From my readings, I understood that the criminal following his death is forgiven, but he is not expiated. In other words, the karmic ramifications and lessons will be learned regardless in how many years. So even though the higher, the God will forgive him following his death, he will still come back and learn the lessons that...
Okay, it's
that need to be learned.
Here's the problem, though.
So,
we run into semantics so easily here, because in the West we have many twisted concepts. That higher nature, which is our real nature, doesn't forgive, it understands. If you understand why someone did something, you don't have to forgive them. Forgiving is something outside of law. It's saying it didn't matter. It did matter, but I understand it. I know why you did it, and I see the price that has to be paid. But the one who is feeling that is not the personal nature now. That is the soul who will return in a new body with a new personality and usually no remembrance of the incident and will pay the karma. That's our problem. Because we don't understand the law, we go, what the heck? Why is this happening to me? I'm a very nice person. I'm a very good person. This isn't fair. And the minute we put that wall up, we will not understand and learn the lesson. If we understood this is law, this is mine, I may not know how I did it, but it belongs to me. I'm going to accept it. Yes.
There's a saying in Western tropical astrology, also in sidereal astrology. And in sidereal astrology, it's called Rahu and Ketu. And in Western astrology, it's called the North Node and South Node. Mm-hmm. It's the nodes of the moon. And this deals with karma. And it says, like, for example, if you have your South Node in one area, then that's your karma that you brought into this life when your soul incarnated back into this life. And in the North Node is where you have your destiny point for soul evolution or soul growth.
Would be the greater picture, you
mean.
Yeah.
Do you believe that that can actually help others? Because everybody has a natal chart, you know?
Okay. And first of all, we need to explain what I believe doesn't matter at all. It's what theosophy teaches. No one from this platform should be giving out their ideas, opinions, or beliefs. We are happily bound to the promise of giving out theosophy. Specifically, theosophy says that astrology in and of itself is a science, but that it has been so tainted over time, just as religion. I mean, religion has its truth and its reality basis, but there are individuals over time who color and distort things for their own reasons. So it might very well be true what you are saying, but each individual has to look at their own natal chart and see what it points to, but not for the purpose of looking what's going to happen tomorrow. And how am I going to find this or get that? But seeing this is the condition that I was born into. Maybe I can take the good and improve it, take the negative and work on it. But that's an individual choice. Yes.
That's what I wanted to elaborate on a little more about what you were saying about, for example, if somebody says, why does this situation continuously happen to me? And that's why I brought up the idea of the natal chart.
Right.
Because, like, for example, if you have a certain situation, from my own experience, what I've seen people who I've done charts for or looked at my own chart, it's like certain situations that I find myself in and or other people who tell me that they find themselves in, and then I do a reading or something like that for them, and then it comes up like, okay, this actually correlates with your karma.
Okay. But I think what we have to realize here is we don't need someone else to do a reading. We can do a reading of our life every day. All we have to do is look at, well, what problems came up for me today? What did I do very poorly? What could I have done better? What did I do that was okay? And we're asked to do that every night before we go to sleep. Review our day from a higher position. Now, sometimes it helps if you pretend to be someone that you know that's very wise and good and gentle. You can, like, bring them your problems and listen to what they say, because you trust them. What you're really using is a higher aspect of yourself that maybe you can't manifest yet. But that's what you're trying to do. It's not to be critical of yourself. What's the point? Do you criticize children when they're learning to walk? Oh, that was terrible. Don't do that again. No. You encourage, you assist, you help, and it's all done with love. Well, that's what you begin to do with and for yourself. The fact is, we don't need anybody else, ever. But in learning all of this, we realize the best thing we can do is share the little we've been given, and then others share back with us, and the growth becomes a team effort. We all are one. And if we sink into that, law is one, we are one, no one is our enemy, no one needs to save us, we already have everything we need. Yes?
A paradise is used, that I hear a lot, is used in this part tonight. And many religions talk about when you die, you go to paradise. And we always found that interesting. And in the Theosophy, we find that the ideas that we hold at the end of life determines our after-death state. So if I don't believe that there is any afterlife, I do not have a conscious one. But if I believe in a vivid afterlife with my family and my friends, and you know, I experience that somehow. Mm-hmm. So, the point being, I guess, is this is sort of telling us again that we create everything in our world, everything.
Because the after-death state is as big a dream or illusion as this state. You know, the only time in a 24-hour period we are real is in the deep sleep state, because there we're free of a personality. We are spiritual beings at one with each other, at one with the highest beings we can imagine, because they know we are identical to them. We're the ones that don't know it. They know it. Yes?
Well, like you said, and also when you're meditating, you can realize. But I think like what we're here for, at least what I'm here for, is to realize God. And, then,
and manifest.
So karma, that's all karma really is just you trying to realize God, just other ways to get you to realize you can be with God. And also, like, what you want to do, I mean, we all are projectors, you know, and we see, like,
I am a camera,
earlier,
right.
We're seeing how you offend people, and sometimes you can't even help it because people are projecting their things on you, and it's what you want. If you're ready to spend all your, time searching for God and being around God, then I don't think you can really offend somebody. I mean, if you're, if you're just, because...
Sure you can offend somebody,
well,
but it's because they want to be offended.
Yeah,
exactly.
Because they're projecting, but also, like you were saying, trying to control your conversation and control your words.
we get your point. It's it's like what Maslow said. If all you have is a nail, everything looks like a hammer. Or is it just the opposite? If all you have is a hammer, everything looks like a nail. So there are people that are looking for trouble, that set you up. Didn't you ever have someone do that to you, a teacher or someone set you up to fall flat on your face? But if that brings them pleasure, it also brings you instruction. We learn from falling down, from being embarrassed, being ashamed. It's, you said karma, that we cannot ever, ever talk glibly about karma. Why? Because back to the chaos theory, the least little thing is impacting the whole. Something I did maybe 10,000 years ago is going to come crashing down on me tomorrow. And my reaction will affect the people around me. Karma is huge, but it's also simple. Anyone who doesn't own it for a quarter, stop at the book table and buy Judge's Aphorisms on Karma. And there's 31 of them. Spend every day reading just one of them and thinking about it. What does this mean? He makes them very clear. And if we can apply them to ourselves, if it is a law and I learn how to use it, it can only benefit me and all of life. Yes, we are seeking God. Why? Because we are God. Yes.
On page 2, the last paragraph, it starts with the second sentence. It says, the action may be instantaneous, the effects are eternal. How can that be? Because don't things even out with karma at times, with action and reaction, doesn't the surface become clear at one point and then you can see your own reflection?
Yes, but can you go and erase the past? If something has been disturbed, you can bring it back into harmony, but the memory of that disturbance remains. It doesn't have to be within the individual. You could step past it, but it's within the earth, within the sensibility of nature. It is. Nothing is ever lost, ever.
Could you say that it's recorded in the Akashic records?
Yes. There is a record of it in the memory of life. Yes.
You mentioned that every state of existence is, in effect, an illusion. The physical state is an illusion. The astral state is an illusion. The demigod is their own illusion. I don't know if nirvana is its own illusion or not. My question is, in that case, if this is so, the only state where there is no illusion is the ability to traverse all those planes of existence in fact, then you only then do not live in an illusion because you see every state as they
we
are.
We absolutely promise you that we could not deal with that question at all, except we can say that the philosophy teaches that in our own nature, that I is not an illusion. It is a drop of the divine. And as Plato said about meditation, it is not turning to achieve anything, but to be and recognize the divine. When you recognize the divine in yourself, you are real. All the other things are conditions or trials or experiences, however you want to look at them. But as spiritual beings, we are the only reality of ourselves. Yes?
How could I possibly recognize the divine if I live in an illusion?
There's one word in your question that answers your question. How could I? The I is constant. It recognizes change. It sees change because it's changeless. If it changed, it couldn't see change. So the how could I possibly recognize the divine? Because I am that divine. And when I step away from and peel away all of this nonsense, and we think everyone who's gotten to our age, even the youngest person in here, has had at one point in their life an epiphany of some kind where they stood and realized some taste of eternity, some realization of perfect bliss and harmony that had nothing to do with this plane or with sensations of any kind. That is the reality of our nature, and that is what we strive to bring forth in this nature. That's our task. And when we get the personality to the point where it is not spotless, that's not the word we want, where it is submissive to our true nature, then we are on the way to mastery. We've become an adept, and we will, it is said, be taken in hand by those who have true knowledge and power, who gave out these ideas and have throughout the ages. So we make ourselves ready by that recognition of our spirituality, and then at the proper point, someone comes to instruct us as an individual, because the responsibility for having that kind of power is awesome, and we can't be left alone to discover it. Yes?
So karma's tricky on so many levels.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for example, guilt. I believe,
can't hear you.
I believe guilt can create karma. So I personally...
And shame?
Anything, all of those things. And this is how, where if I want to beat myself up for wrong things that I did, I'm actually creating more karma.
Mm-hmm.
So I think part of what my job is to accept, well, yeah, some of the things I do are not perfect, but you know what? This is what happened.
Right.
And freeing myself of guilt, because the guilt and the shame and all those other feelings actually have very destructive effects, not only on me, but on the people
right.
around me. So I don't think karma is always only about actions. And
no, of course it isn't. Mr. Judge says it perfectly. He says, regret nothing. Now, that sounds terrible. There are many things I've done I have to regret. But he says, if you're regretting them, you are living in the past and you're not building anything. That you must take your mind and say, all right, this is what happened. This is what I did. This is why I did it. I'm going to learn better. I will never do that again. And HPB said it in a very simple way. If something brings you shame, don't do it again. So yes, we create more difficulty for ourselves by the way we behave in reaction to our karma. But if we were to accept it and say, I will move on from here, yes?
Well, the way that vicarious atonement works so well, it wasn't really mentioned in the part.
Well, it doesn't work.
Well,
it just...
It works on people, which is...
Okay, thank you.
It works on their minds and plays on their emotions.
Right.
And every part of their nature is because of the belief that we're poor, miserable sinners.
Mm-hmm.
Therefore, we are inherently imperfect, and we need someone to save us.
Right. You know, it's really... It's sad. If we were to sit down and write down the attributes given to the personal God, they start out very, very nice, loving, even the sparrow, we can't think of the expression, but it's beautiful, that nothing can happen to anything in nature that isn't in his care and protection. But then it turns on itself, and he's wrathful. You read the things that happened in Exodus, and you want to scream. They're horrible. We are taught that it is God the Father. And yet, if it really were, in a court of law in this country, that father would have been in jail a long, long time ago. He is abusive beyond belief. And yet, people are conditioned to think it's all a mystery and I don't have the right to inquire into it. But Theosophy says the mystery is that we can continue to hold such foolish, childish ideas when we can already see better the extent of our powers. Now, remind you, next Sunday is Reason and Intuition, which is a way of approaching an understanding of karma. Meeting is adjourned.